Welcome to this episode of the Strong Kind Podcast. This episode is with David Newton. David is a chiropractor, he's a rehab practitioner, and an educator. David is on a mission to change the chiropractic status quo. We had a great conversation. It ranged from us talking about video games and how we're nerds to exercise, training, rehab, health, all sorts of topics. It was really interesting. I mean, we could have talked for hours. I think this episode is one of those ones where I just reflect on how there's a lot of really cool people looking to change the game when it comes to rehab and health, and it's fun to connect with them. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it. Peace. I'm
But
recording this because this is the good stuff. This is how
no,
we should start stuff, dude. All right, so here
absolutely.
I'm gonna tell you what's straight up is I played World of Warcraft like.
Yes.
When it first came out,
Same.
I literally remember, gosh, I remember we turned in our pads for football after football season. It was like mid-November, and I think it was after my junior year, and I went and I got World of Warcraft because a couple of my buddies who didn't play football were playing it, and I literally it just sucked me in like, and it was a problem, like a legitimate problem. It probably like. Cost me like I played soccer in the spring and I played like shit most of the season, mostly because I was like just thinking about World of Warcraft. It's so bad, dude. But the whole story is they like WoW Classic came out and my buddies got back into it. And so like I have been playing like I play for like 45 minutes to an hour, like 3 times a week, which is that's the hard thing about that game is like you don't feel like you're getting anything done, right?
That's discipline to only play for that little amount of
Well,
time
I'm
in
gonna be
that
honest. There's times where I like my wife's like, and it, you know, my wife's like, you need to come spend some time with me, and she's right. But it also is just it satisfies. I don't think when I'm playing that game, and my brain is always cooking, and I think that's part of why I like it is like I'm just completing quests and killing mobs, and you know, just kind of like living it out, right? So.
I played World of Warcraft too. Before that, it was StarCraft. I was really big into that. I was halfway decent at the game back then. I watch videos of people play now, they would smoke me. But yeah, I was very much a Blizzard guy. It was like Diablo, StarCraft, World of Warcraft, all of those things. Now, I did see that WoW Classic came back. I briefly considered it, but I think to your point, having these smaller windows of opportunity to play, I feel like I wouldn't feel accomplished only playing for like 45 minutes or an hour. And I know the time suck that can be, but I did recently play through Elden Ring, and that I beat it, but it was something that kind of sucked my soul away. And it was, my wife makes fun of me because I come home and I kind of play video games for the same reason as you. It's just like disconnect, not to think too much. But that was like one of the most stressful games I ever played. So
Elden Ring was so hard.
it
Like
was so hard.
right at the beginning, I'm like, why is this so hard? Like, take me through a little bit better of a tutorial. I just like got my ass kicked really fast. And I like that is one of those games. It's so much of I think it's well, it just capitalizes on like the human mind where like when we can like when I'm playing sports or when I'm playing video games. Like stuff doing something that I like kind of enjoy and I'm not having to like toggle all this information, it like is addicting because I mean even before I hopped on with you, like we had a plumber at our house and it's like, oh, I gotta figure this out and I gotta like check and like make sure some other things are going. And then I had like a client, I said it's literally somebody like book in for a call. I'm like, oh shit, that actually doesn't work. So now I gotta reach out to them and like reconfirm a different time. And that's okay. Like most of this stuff is just like learning to put out your fires a lot better, right? But like when me and my wife's also noticed, she's like, you just like chill out a little bit. Like it's like you and your like, and this is the other thing. Dudes need to do something and then like talk, right? Whereas my wife will call her sister and talk for 3 hours. And I have never had a 3 hour conversation in my whole life. Even like one of my best buddies, we talk for like 20 minutes, right? And but when I'm like playing WoW with some of my buddies, like we just literally goof off and we're, you know, killing stuff and it's so stupid and it's so nerdy. But also like I kind of look at it. There's like a lot of people that I really respect. Who's the guy who plays Superman? Gosh, what's his name? Like
The newish
yeah,
one.
the newer guy. Like
Oh,
he's a very
Henry
famous.
Cavill.
Yeah, like he plays WoW, he builds his own computers and plays WoW. And so all right, like we're not that big a nerd, right? So
Or we're all just nerds, and just some
yeah.
people are open about it, right?
Exactly, right? Yeah. Like I mean, You got old guys who put together fake farms in their basement or trains, right? It's just that type of stuff, or fishing. Like, and I like fishing, I like doing all this stuff, but it's just we just have to occupy our brains, right? So
100%.
in ways that are not drugs and alcohol.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, video games fills that void for a lot of us, and I think we just grew up in that generation too. It was like to go from like the regular Nintendo back in the day and to see the evolution of video games and computers and all of these things. I think like that was very much our generation. We had these things available and we got to see things advance over a period of time, and that was really exciting for us. So now as adults and possibly having a little more expendable income, we see all these cool things that remind us of us of our childhood, and
Yes.
it's hard not to splurge a little bit there sometimes.
Yeah, it's 100%. Well, and that's kind of the point of being an adult, right? It's like you if you're making some money and you have it to spend, as long as like it's, me buying a computer to like it probably saves me a lot of money in like not doing other stuff, right? Like you think about it and like is that good or bad? I don't know, but like golf is such an expensive and
Oh
time-consuming
God,
hobby,
yeah.
right? And I love golf, but
Same.
like to play golf as much as maybe I would like to, like a 4 to 5 hours away from your family on a regular basis, right? It's expensive. Like most people want to drink while they're out there, so it's like that was like one. Let's literally one of my buddies is like, dude, we could be doing drugs and like we could be drinking and cheating on our wives. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. And he's like, so like, cause I we were just joking about how like lame we are, and it's like, yeah, okay, this isn't so bad, right? So, well, that I love segues to that, because like that's why I do this podcast, is because like I just want to like have real conversations between real people.
Absolutely.
I don't really
Yeah.
have like the agenda. There is an agenda for this podcast, and especially with you, I like want to talk about, like, I was literally just going over to your Instagram, right? And chiropractic, rehabilitative care, all that type of stuff, like that's what I want to talk about to some degree. But a lot of like my business is that I'm just trying to be a kind human
Yeah.
that like shows up for people, and like that's pretty much what care is to me. Like, hey, we're gonna do strength and conditioning, and we are going to like, 'cause somebody asked me about like their back on like Wednesday, and I'm like they've been working with me for 4 months, and like they just told me that like something's been bothering them for 3 weeks. I'm like, okay, first and foremost, like if something is concerning to you, let me know right away, right? But also, how are you? She was basically like, yeah, I just kind of thought that it would get better, and it just hasn't gotten better like within 3 weeks. I'm like, first and foremost, that's kind of awesome that you're like, it'll probably just get better, but you can tell me, and then we can address it in some different ways. But like, that's pretty much my approach to like all of this stuff, right? But that approach is not sexy in any way, shape, or form, right?
No, not at all. I think, and I think there's a lot of positives to social media that go alongside the negatives, but I think, sexy is a great word because this is what draws people in. This is what people, are kind of almost wired towards, I think, the way that we look at like how our brains work. And the unfortunate truth, I think, of what a lot of what you do and a lot of what I do is it's kind of the opposite of sexy.
Yeah.
And like we get into these conversations, which I think are great, where we can talk about the nuance of everything and the context of the situations we're in. But these things also require time. I can't sit down and explain to someone in 10 seconds or less into detail what it is that I do and how that might benefit somebody, which is about if we get 10 seconds to capture someone's attention online, like that's a long period of time. So I think that's the unfortunate truth and maybe why it's difficult to convey this information through various avenues is because we just don't have the attention span for it most of the time. And to your point, it's not sexy as much as it might be effective. And we're probably very much in the era of being attracted to sexiness much more than what's effective a lot of the time, unfortunately. So yeah, I can see where you're going with some of that.
Why are back cracks so sexy? That's my
Oh, it's the whole ASMR thing, and I'm sure of using this, but it's the over-sexualization of half of these videos as well, where it's those are
there
just
is
things
like,
that
yeah,
sell,
legitimately
right?
that, where they have like girls literally in like skimpy outfits cracking their back. Like, I'm like, what the hell
It's
is this?
just it's so intentional, and
Yeah.
what disgusts me is like the Instagram page, like they got the handle that's just chiropractic, That's the handle, at chiropractic. That's like 99% of the videos on the page that's supposedly representing chiropractic are like drastically over-sexualized videos of women that are barely dressed, and then a questionable practitioner of some type doing things that practitioners should not be doing with their patients, right? But like if someone just Googled, or I guess Instagrammed and searched chiropractic, like that's the first account that would pop up. And that's already putting us not in the best light, which is kind of a shame.
I talked to Claire Zai on Monday or Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday. And I've been a little jaded the past like 2 to 3 weeks. I think it's 'cause like I need a vacation, but I'm like, are we doomed? And she's like, oh, I kind of default to that we are as well, but I have this audacious hope that we're gonna be okay, right? But like, I do kind of think that's the tricky part about like social media health and stuff. And even as Brandolini's principle or Brandolini's law is like that it takes like 10 times the amount of evidence to rebuke a claim than it does to just put out something, right? So like somebody puts out one thing, it takes 10 times, and this I don't even know if this is like it's not statistically true. I think it's just probably like an aphorism, right? But like it really is like, you know, and we can I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the what people need, because that is a lot of subjectivity, right? Like, do you need to have your back cracked? Well, I haven't had my back cracked other than by me doing it against my chair in like 10 plus years, right? And I feel generally pretty good. Like, I'm tired and, you know, I'm a human, so I get a little run down. I haven't had a certain amount of stuff. Like, I haven't, even like in the PT realm, like, I don't do any of the quote unquote recovery stuff that a lot of people are pitching. And again, I feel okay and I'm performing all right, right? So, is it like, and I think part of it is like it seems like it's kind of hard to sell the relationship aspect of this stuff, but that's kind of why I got into healthcare anyway, is because like I wanted to be like somebody that was in my community or creating a community that was just helpful, right? Like, some of the best things I do for people are just reassure them, like, or ask them what we can do in this interim short period of time that allows you to keep moving so that you don't feel like you're broken for 6 months or a year or forever, right?
Yeah, it's tough, and I think maybe I'll stick in the chiropractic lane just because I can speak best to my side of our professions here. And I think historically, where we come from, and just the ideas that first existed 130 years ago around, you know, the idea of needing your back cracked or the correction of certain aspects of your spine in order for you to be healthy, that was fundamental to our profession and its initial existence. The battle that I'm fighting and many other chiropractors are trying to fight on a daily basis is that for about 130 years and all of our existence, we've chosen to not progress beyond those ideas. So the fundamental idea behind chiropractic was you have to correct spinal positioning to maintain health. If this were true, it would make sense why we would want to adjust people all the time. The issue I have is in 130 years, we've yet to prove that this idea has any merit to it. And we've gone on to prove that there are many other things that are consistent with human beings in general being healthy. And a lot of those are probably the things that you do, which are not necessarily related to what most people would consider PT or what most people would consider chiropractic. It's more so along the lines of the decisions that you're capable of making on a daily basis for yourself, probably including exercise, probably including diet, probably including stress management to some degree. And I think these are things that a lot of people need these days. But going back to our earlier point, it's really difficult to navigate space because you go to research what maybe some of these things might be for yourself. You probably get a million and one answers on what that actually looks like. And many of those answers are some people trying to sell you a specific service or product. So I think for the general public, trying to navigate the space, find answers, find people that are trustworthy. It's such a difficult task because, like, what makes someone trustworthy in the space, especially when you probably already have biases, and there's going to be people that confirm those biases for you. So, are you willing to challenge yourself in those moments, or are you looking to for someone that's going to agree with you. And that's probably why people are more attuned to certain therapies or services, just because, like, oh, I think this way, that person thinks this way, this must be something that's good for me. So it's a real challenge. And I'm sure I got off topic to what the original question
No,
was there, but.
you alluded to a few big things, and the thing I think is just like the biases, right? Like, but also where some of these things come from. I mean, like, you look at what are people, what are our professions like kind of fundamentally look to do is a lot of times like manage or quote unquote like solve pain for people, right? And it also just it's very telling, like, chiropractic started as, yeah, we can a we can manipulate, we can crack, right? And like that does something, it alleviates something for somebody, it feels so, like people feel something, right? And then if the original hypo, like I can almost vibe, I don't really think like I can vibe with a lot of like is it D.D. Palmer, is what was his name, like, oh,
Yeah, he's
I
our
can't vibe
founder.
with a lot of the stuff based on the history I know about him, but I can at least vibe with the general hypothesis, like, oh, cracking that person's back seemed to help them with something. Cool, right? Well, the tricky thing is updating our hypotheses over time, right? The beginning of physical therapy as a profession was like very much about like rehabilitation of people post like polio, right? People post very debilitating, or like honestly, combat veterans, like literally, like PTs were just like the first in and I'm not gonna get my history perfect because it's been like 15 years since I listened to those lectures, but like we were literally just personal trainers for people who were like sick or hurt, right? And we were just like actually making people do some shit as opposed to just lay in bed for weeks, right? And like, and some of that means, yeah, you mobilize people with your hands, you get stuff moving and whatnot, but then it's like, oh yeah, we're gonna do that stuff. That was where I just didn't vibe with stuff. It's like, why am I doing range of motion activities with this person that can freaking walk and run and jump? Like, it doesn't make sense to me, right? But like you touched on the big thing, which is like it's so hard for humans to, well, people don't even look at it like this, but like I have people who they go see chiropractors, right? And I see, I bet some of them have like I'm vibe with that, they just like it, it helps them, it's cool. But I have other ones that like they'll tell me something that their chiropractor said and I'm like, God, that is, and I don't necessarily refute it or do anything in that moment because I'm just focused on like, hey, let's focus on what we're doing. But like, but I almost want to ask them, like, does that person, does you feel like it really changes anything for you? Or is it just like this thing that you think you have to do every 2 weeks or every month to like maintain your health, right? And I have asked it to a few people, and a few people, like one person kind of got mad at me for that. One person did kind of like, you know what? Like, I kind of don't know if I need to go anymore. I'm like, I'm not saying to not go, but like, I don't know if it's helping you, right? And that's, and I'm not trying to say like talk crap about other people, but like that is making you more confused and more, like you're checking a box that doesn't necessarily have to be checked. And that's where I get a little bit frustrated.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I think one of my biggest frustrations with the chiropractic profession would be that there are many practitioners who preach that you must have regular care on some frequency to be healthy. Like, that's a fundamental aspect of being healthy. And if you don't do these things, you will break down, you will have pain, you will have degenerative issues as you age. So we're really using fear in a large capacity to drive repeated business, despite the fact that we have nothing to support those statements. But again, that goes back to like where we come from. And we don't have to get into this, but it's like the schooling that we get and the things that we learn. We're not really updated very well on what it looks like to deal with musculoskeletal health in today's world, given the knowledge that we have available to us now. So we're kind of existing in this space where we're not really getting taught stuff that's great. Our clinical experience is not enough. I'm going to be very honest and upfront about that. You're usually under clinicians that have outdated views. Your time to work out in the public and the game, maybe access and experience amongst people that are maybe doing things a little bit in a more modern approach, that's limited or zero. So you come out of school, you pass your boards, and you don't really know what the hell you're doing. Now you're left to your own to try and figure these things out. And I think that's where, with what we're doing, we're trying to support those chiropractors to be able to update their approaches because you're not coming out of school ready. You're not having the clinical experience you need to. And now you're fighting to figure things out on your own without really having a strong basis for what it means to work with people, to work with humans who are dealing with pain, which, as we know, is a very complex thing, despite the fact that many chiropractors will make it seem like it's a very simple thing and that they have the solution for it.
It's also it's like so interesting, like there's almost the this is I kind of think it's both, but I just like there's these two ends of this spectrum. One's like we can fix everything with some form of manual therapy, right? Or we can we like we're gonna do a surgery, which I just when you actually start to look at like the evidence of a lot of like pain-oriented surgeries, it's like God, we are literally cutting into people, making them suffer so that the tissue is just, if it gets better, I think most of it is like, yeah, you just took 6 months off while the thing healed, right? And I'm not saying this for every surgery, I don't want to take it that way, but like most of them when it's pain oriented, right? And even like I'm a little bit on a binge of like ACL, like non-operative ACL, and it's like damn, like that can get that like it, the hard part of, for that is like if you never have the surgery and it never gets like the way you want, like there's always this question, right? And that's the hard part about a lot of this stuff. But you mentioned like what are the things that you and like Clinical Concepts, you know, your mentorship, like what is that trying to help people update, right? And what are the options? Like, because that's some of the things I think, like, you know, there'll be people who for our general public who watch this, and but also just I get a lot of students in both rehab, you know, physical therapy and maybe not a lot of students, but I get some students. So what are like how do you update? What is the me and you kind of touched on this when we just talked privately a couple weeks ago, like, but yeah, what are the things like what are the skills of the modern day practitioner of rehab and pain management type stuff?
I think first and foremost, we want people to get away from the idea that you have to adjust people because you are a chiropractor. As you mentioned before, I think manipulation, joint manipulation, can be a useful tool often to provide temporary relief in various areas of the body, specifically the spine for a lot of people, right? That's why a lot of people go to chiropractors. But I think this becomes very damaging when we feel like we have to default to it, given that our scope of practice is relatively wide and we have the option to do all sorts of therapies. Like we can do the muscle work, we can do exercise, we can do patient education, we can do all sorts of things that, from my perspective, encompass a better, more patient-centered approach. And I think patient-centered is maybe another term that gets thrown around a lot. Like, what does that really mean? What does it mean to be patient-centered? What does it mean to be evidence-based? These are terms that just get thrown around left and right. But I think we would probably both agree that when we're working with clients or patients, part of the goals that we should be looking for, they're not the goals that I have. Like, I shouldn't be telling someone, I need your back to look like this. I need your hip to move like this. It's really digging deeper into figuring out, okay, from the patient's perspective, yes, pain is obviously something that most people come in with and they want the pain to be gone. Valid. There's nothing wrong with that. But maybe understanding how that pain is affecting them beyond that. What other aspects of life are being affected because of the pain or discomfort that you're dealing with? And to me, this is where having a broader approach to care becomes important, whether it is teaching someone how to strengthen, whether it's teaching someone how to manage stress, whether it's just telling someone they need to back off from the activity that they're doing at the intensity that they're at for your period of time. Like you're talking about the rehab and these surgeries and things. It's sometimes people are just doing too damn much. And if we just get them to chill out for a second, that doesn't even mean stop. Sometimes things get better. But to me, this is where we can't default to a certain type of care and just say, like, this is what somebody needs. The number one skill is to be able to communicate with someone and have a human to human interaction with them to better understand who they are, what they believe, and what they want out of care, to then guide your clinical decision making process, which can include any of the things that I just mentioned in combination, depending on who that person is and where they're at. But that's the point. Like, it's not a clear path. I can't sit here and tell you what the next back pain patient is going to need or what the next knee patient is going to need in their care. I don't know that until I talk to them, understand them, to which is then going to guide the decision making. So I think it's hard because I can't give you a straight answer, right? I can't say like this is what it is. It's comprised of all of these different facets of care in some combination at some points in time for that person. And that's a very hard thing to discuss.
I think it's why like the didactic education for a lot of fields is like, the most useful skills of a practitioner. Like if you went to like if I went to PT school and it's like we're gonna work on motivational interviewing in these classes. Like you're gonna do a 12-week probably I'd probably be in hindsight like freaking awesome, but like from the student standpoint, they'd be like, this sucks because it's like, how are we communicating? How are we asking questions? How are we like evoking? Especially because like if you were going into psychiatry, somebody probably could understand that, right? Where you're going into PT, where you're going into chiropractic, where I think a lot of it is this, well, if I figure out the anatomy and I figure out why somebody has back pain and it's because of this, it's because they have spondylolisthesis, right? Okay, well, that's a mechanical thing. So I can figure out the mechanics of, and it's like, but the weird thing is like a lot of this shit doesn't matter that much.
Right.
Like the specific quote unquote pathology is just a result of the stress on the overarching system. And like you said, so much of just what we're trying to do is be like, okay, it seems like the combination of what you're doing from a physical output standpoint and the other stressors that are in your life, this is more than you can handle right now. And so there's this mismatch between your current capacity and what you're trying to do. And that's why you feel like shit, right? And like, so we need to learn to manage that. And it's hard because humans, like when humans get into exercise, they really like to exercise because it like does some, like especially when you go from like not really liking exercise to liking it, you're like, oh, this is my identity now. And then you're like, and then it becomes hard because if you take that away from somebody, like, oh, and I'm this is me, like I'm this way. I think you're probably this way a little bit too. It's like it's learning to chill out. It's learning to go for a bike ride instead of your 10-mile run, right? It's learning to like, hey, I don't have to freaking hit 85% on squats today if I'm not feeling great, right? But those conversations are not like what people even expect from like a trainer, right?
Sure.
Like from the trainer, it's like you got to push. From the medical professional, it's like, well, you shouldn't be doing that at all. And like, really, I think we just exist in this middle ground of communication and like understand, like this, you said at the beginning, it's like, or it's like, I can't communicate in 10 seconds all the shit I know about physiology. Right. And it takes like literally how you help people is you help them learn a little bit at a time so that they can make better decisions. Right. And so it's basically, I just look at it more and more like this. I'm trying to help people not necessarily look at it from my viewpoint because my viewpoint is my own viewpoint. But I do think there are principles that I understand and experiences that I've had that help me. And so I'm basically trying to help people go through those experiences while also recognizing that they are not me, right? And that's really hard because a lot of what we do is like, well, this is what works for me. And like it's valid, but it's also not perfect, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We all have our own experiences, and I think that if you don't have the awareness that your experiences are your experiences and yours alone, it can become very easy to convey a message of, well, this worked for me, or I've done this, so this should be used with everybody. I actually had a conversation with a chiropractor today, who I think our views align a lot. But one thing that he had said to me is that I think the adjustment is the cornerstone of what we do as chiropractors. And he was open to having a discussion around this, which was fantastic because not every chiropractor is.
Yeah.
And I
If
simply
you
asked,
make
like,
that
why?
statement and you're open to talking about it, that's a pretty freaking
It's
great
huge, right?
level.
Right. And so I asked him, in a very polite, open-ended way. I was like, why do you believe that? And he went on to tell a story of when he was a kid, how he had had an injury in his back that was not helped by medical doctors. It was not helped by months of physical therapy. I forget what else he had said. He had tried several different things. But then he had gone to a chiropractor who had adjusted him, and after one visit, had like 90% resolution of these symptoms that had existed for months. So from his perspective, and from that moment on, he felt as though the adjustment held the power to heal him. So therefore, it should be a part or a key component of what chiropractic care is. But after having, a few back and forths in there and asking a few further questions, like he came to the realization that, okay, I understand that maybe that is what helped me, but he's like, oh, maybe I have had patients where that actually didn't help them the way that I expected to. And we began down this path of just being curious in general about, okay, we do things that work, we do a lot of things that don't work sometimes. And maybe us growing within ourselves, within the profession, is just asking the question of why. Like, why did this work or why didn't it work in a given situation to then better ourselves? But I think this is where people get hung up a lot, is that especially chiropractors. Well, I've had all these patients that got better when I adjusted them 36 times in 4 weeks or whatever it is. So this must be great. But they never mention the people that didn't get better in that period of time. And I think that's where the focus should be more. Like, why didn't things work and what could I have done differently to help those people? That's where the growth really happens rather than just throwing that out the window.
I think the failures in PT, medicine, chiropractic are the things that we should look at, right? Like it's the classic like the bombers that came back with the bullet holes in them. It's like, oh, we're gonna shore up the ship where the bullet, they're like, no, that's where the things were fine, right? Like, look at what you got to think about what was not working, right? And it's so crazy to me. Like, oh, I had a when I first started my business, a guy who I used to coach in CrossFit, great guy, like, man, really like him. He came to me because he's had chronic back pain, right? And it's just kind of continuously gotten like a little bit debilitative, right? And started working together, and I like just jumped into like the psychosocial aspects of stuff too fast, and like he kind of pulled away, and I was still, and this is only 4 years ago, but I was just like, it's like, that like those things are important, but like what I have to get him to do is like experience like some relief and realize like, yeah, like dude, yoga, like just, you know what I think yoga really is for a lot of people? It's like 10 to 20 minutes or 30 minutes or a 60 minute class of you just breathing. Like there's no real expectations. I mean, there's probably some expectations, but it's like you moving and breathing, right? And like looking back, he had some moments where I was like, yeah, like we're doing some like yoga-esque stuff and that really helps me. I'm like, great, like we'll keep that in, but we got to get stronger, right? And I just look back on like that failure and I'm like, what was that? And it wasn't that I didn't like have this approach to treatment that could have helped him. It was that I didn't like listen to what he needed in that moment, right? And I look at that all the time. Like, if and I don't know that guy's situation, I don't want to be assumptive, but if you go from practitioner to practitioner and you get somebody that makes you feel heard, makes you feel safe, and you change their experience enough in that after that one situation, and like you give them a little bit of relief and you show them like, I look back on this one instance with this kid who was just super freaking afraid that his back was jacked up, right? And like I didn't it didn't it took like a couple seconds or a couple sessions, but like there was this moment where he kind of came to the realization that because it didn't hurt all the time, and it really hurt like when he was doing a couple things, but that didn't mean that his back was just jacked up, right? And you kind of just saw him like just chill out and like, and that was like, okay, how do I create this again, right? And it's hard, like, what you have to convey is optimism, and that like if it's not hurting like with everything, it's we kind of gotta like look at aggravating and easing things and move forward. And but not everybody's gonna get that, and they're not always gonna want that, right? They want the fix. Like another somebody that I had a recent consult call, like her hips hurting. You could just tell she was in this like biomedical, there's got to be a fix for this thing. And I just had to kind of be like, I don't think I'm the practitioner for you right now. And that sucks to say, because I really think if she was more open to what I was conveying, it would help, right? But she just wanted somebody to be like, yeah, this is your exact problem. And that's what a lot of people do.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest challenges we face as clinicians is having the constraint to hold back the knowledge that we have in certain moments and having the awareness of when someone is more likely ready to take on some of that knowledge to your point with that client, where you give them too much too soon, it can be very invalidating because it's almost as if we didn't hear anything that they had to say, and now we're just going to say what we want to say. And I've done this probably dozens of times throughout my career where I did the same thing you did. Like I start going down my whole spiel of, well, it's this and this, and we can explain the pain by that. And all they walk away is, well, you didn't listen to a damn thing that I just said. And now you're just saying stuff that probably doesn't align with the way that they think about things. So you come off as dismissive, whether or not you're trying to be helpful or you have better information, it just doesn't matter in those moments. And it's so interesting to have those experiences and then be able to look at yourself after the fact and come to the realization that the delivery wasn't as good as it could have been, and it was more about what you wanted to say versus listening to what they had to say. And these are the moments for growth. But I think, like this is some of the stuff that it's so hard to teach people, and you almost have to experience it. You almost have to fail to really learn this, because we can talk about this here. But when you're in the moment interacting with somebody, interacting with a patient, it is such a challenge to come up with the words that best fit that moment and the best words for that person. I think this is where only experience can teach you sometimes on how to handle these situations. But I think just even having the awareness that, maybe I should say less in this moment, or maybe there's a different way to explain something, even having that level of awareness is such a good starting point. And it's a skill that I think not all clinicians have. They're there to say what they want to say what they think. And the active listening component is just not there. And from my perspective, that's maybe one of the most important things it is that we can do as healthcare practitioners is be a good listener first, so that we can then have an idea of where we want to start with our explanation or education or guidance or whatever it is.
Yeah, I kind of look at it this way. It's like if you're the clinician that kind of wants to be this the prescriber, like in the mechanic, like you're gonna find people that want to work with you because there are a lot of people who just kind of like want to be told what to do, right? But I honestly also think like if you're the clinician who can like figure out how to listen and ask good questions, like I think that is just the better. It will, I think that will almost like universal, I can't say universally. It will, I would say it is the thing that I think works just best overall is to be better at listening. Because you look at the gurus, and the gurus have built reputations where like the herd kind of follows, right? But like, and I love Tony Robbins. I'll just be honest. Like, I think like Tony Robbins is just trying to create energy and stuff. But like the people who go to like, it's kind of like going to church. Like people go to church every Sunday and it gives them this hit of like positivity and there's goodness. And I'm not critiquing church here. I'm just making a statement about like what humans do. I think people go to Tony Robbins's stuff and they get that vibe energy, but then they're just always going through it, right? And I think like, you go, then you look at somebody who is like somebody that I'm really Steve Magnus right now. Steve Magnus is like a writer. He writes on like performance and kind of the realities of like the human experience, right? And it's like, he's not gonna go and do a Tony Robbins like motivational weekend to get his energy. He's gonna like show up and write every day. He's gonna like practice his craft, right? And I think that's like there, do you want to be like the solver who really isn't solving, and or do you want to be the person that helps people kind of see things differently? Because like for me, like unless something really catastrophic happens, I'm probably never having like a musculoskeletal surgery, like because I just don't think that we're actually doing anything, right? And I know pain sucks and stuff, but I think most of it's just a byproduct of me as an organism, right? And so it's like I just want people who are going to help me understand the thing better, like help me understand physiology better, help me understand psychology better, help me look at this thing better. And I think that's what, I don't know if we're going to get there, but I think that's the future of health is teaching people like these are the principles of physiology and probably some human psychology. And then this is, again, what seems to work in general for people, a social support, right? Feeling like you're not screwed over if you don't have a little bit of support, right? Or if you get sick or if you get injured, strength and conditioning, sleep, nutrition, video games, right? Knitting,
It's the
crochet.
not sexy stuff, right? All the
Yeah.
simple stuff.
But so like talk about like the clip, like, 'cause you're right. It's really hard to make like a curriculum, 'cause I think about this all the time. Like, what would the curriculum of like a mentorship be for me, right? But like, what's clinical concepts, like the curriculum, or what are you trying to do there with the other practitioners that are in it?
The way that we introduce things is by giving people an updated clinical practice guideline of what musculoskeletal care should look like, given what we know now. And we start with this because I think it defines the use of passive therapies such as spinal manipulation or muscle work as an adjunct to other therapies rather than the defining characteristic of what those things are. And I think seeing this written out in a clinical practice guideline that's a synthesis of other clinical practice guidelines, it gets us out of the mindset of we must do things to people in order for them to feel better. And then some of the other defining characteristics of this guideline are that there should be active components to care, whether you're administering them or you're just having a discussion around how they can meet those things, along with a lot of other things that are just consistent with what chiropractic care has traditionally been. It's like avoiding regular use of X-rays unless we suspect something more malicious is going on. All these things that I think really set us up for these discussions of the more nuanced points being like, how do we begin to effectively communicate? How do you begin to be a better listener? How do you begin to understand people's behaviors and maybe the fears that they have, and how that will then dictate the decisions that they make after the fact? So, like, yes, we have components related to exercise prescription. Yes, we have components related to business that are there and how to build a practice around being a more evidence-driven practitioner. But I think all of this is stemming from the ideas of these are some of the nuances and complexity of humans in general, especially humans that are in pain. And if we can have the awareness that these things are going on, now you get to figure out which tool you want to pull out to work with someone. Maybe a joint manipulation is the answer in that moment. Maybe that's the completely wrong answer in that moment, and we need to just sit there and talk to someone for 30 to 45 minutes to make them feel more confident that their body isn't falling apart. And then follow
Yeah.
that up with, okay, here's an exercise to show you that you're not broken. And we always go back to one of these quotes from, I believe it's from Peter O'Sullivan, who's one of the best pain scientists in the world. And it's that we don't have to change beliefs to change behaviors. And I think when we look at the things that we're trying to accomplish with so many people, when you boil it down, it really is behavior change for a lot of people. But
Yeah.
the fact that we're not always trying to invalidate, I guess, people's thoughts and ideas, I'm not trying to change your beliefs. I'm simply trying to give you maybe a slightly different perspective. And then maybe even sneakily in some way, like, have you do something that's going to cause you to change your own beliefs on your own simply by giving you a behavior change modification that might make you feel better. So, like, yes, it's hard to kind of boil everything down on what we do, but I think that's a general outline of like what we're trying to accomplish for chiropractic students and new practitioners is to take these really complicated ideas and things that will probably realistically take you years to begin to feel comfortable about, but to at least introduce them in a way where now you're thinking about the right things in patient interactions. Now you're beginning to develop your own thought process around clinical decisions from a much more nuanced perspective, which from my opinion, like, it just has to be because of how complex people are and how complex pain is in general.
Yeah. Oh, so I mean, like, I think that's the hard part about probably explaining, nuanced mentorship, nuanced topics. Like, but I think what you're trying to do is provide frameworks and models that are not given in traditional schooling, right? To, again, it's these exposures, right? It's oh yeah, like, oh, like seeing what other people, like how I mostly learn is like seeing what other people do and be like, okay, what do they do there? Okay, I'll try to do something similar, right? And so and then a models, just like understanding more models. Like, I just always am thinking about like the envelope of function, right? I'm thinking about like, and some none of this stuff, I can't remember a lot of it being talked about, but like, it just makes more sense to be like, okay, so what we're trying to actually do is some amount of stress, recovery and adaptation, right? The amount of stress we deliver base is based upon like what their current capacity is, right? So, if this is a 74-year-old woman who hasn't squatted below parallel in 15 years, what do you think is going to feel good for her, right? Trying to get her to do some goofy extra, like, God, I had this one guy who's he just tried to get this lady to do something she just didn't even understand. And he kind of got mad at me as like a student when I'm like, what about if we just squat to this chair like 10 times? He's like, well, that's not really. And it was like, and but that it's like that's also part of it. Like as a student, like I kind of felt like an asshole to be like, let's just try something really simple. Right? And I think that's part the power of some of this education is like it can be kind of simple. Like literally what pain is an un un it's an unpleasant sensory or emotional experience, right? Well, you said it too, that Peter O'Sullivan quote, just try to give them a different experience. Similar, oh, I get pain when I do this. Okay, like what happens if you just widen your feet? Oh, damn, I don't get pain anymore. That's a new experience, right? Like that's kind of the game. And then it buys you the opportunity to be like, yeah, so you're actually your knee is not like super jacked up. It's just it doesn't tolerate this, right?
Yeah, I think to your point, it's what we're doing realistically, it is very simple. I think the complexity in what we do. Your example with this exercise, right? It's to understand like what's a good starting point for someone and being able to make a semi-accurate assessment of where that is versus, and this is what I think so many people do is they have a defaulted set of exercises or a defaulted set of treatments that this type of person will do these things rather than simply asking a question, thinking about where a person is at, and like, oh, this makes sense. Yeah, this person hasn't squatted to this depth in a million years. Why would I have them do this ridiculous thing when we could just have them squat to maybe a chair that's easy for them to get to? Very simple solution, but in certain instances, like you just have to have the capacity to take that step back away from some of the things you've learned, think about them as a person, and kind of go through these simple problem-solving exercises to figure out like what's your next decision going to be. But I think the way that we're taught in school, it's so regimented and it's just so driven by specific protocols and procedures. I like systems and frameworks to organize your decisions, but I don't like having specific protocols for specific things because I just don't think people respond that way or like that we can exist in that world. So these things are all useful, but I think that's some of the faults that we tend to see are that people want to default to protocols. They want to default to certain systems rather than just taking a moment to remove yourself from the situation and just think logically about what's going on. Oftentimes, you can find that simple solution, but you just need to get out of your own head sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and there's also just a certain amount of like, damn, I went to school to be the solution, right? And it's like, I still struggle like, and I've had conversations like I'm very happy like that I went to physical therapy school for a lot of reasons, right? And I honestly don't really I'm not really perturbed or pissed off about the cost of education per se. I think we could do a better job of managing that discussion. And I think there's schools that are costing people like $250,000 to go to physical therapy school. And like, damn, that's not, I think you should really think about the return on investment if you're going to pay that much, right? Like I paid basically around $100,000 to go to school. And I like also had a job during school to some extent. Wasn't like amazing, but I could pretty much pay for my groceries, right? Which is fine. But like, if you go to school and you get this credential, like you want to feel like you are. I think I wanted to feel like a healer or a fixer, right? And then, guys like me and you are 8 to 10 years out, and we're like, yeah, a lot of it is just actually being a nice human being who can help people understand that they're not jacked up and they're not broken, and that they just probably need to take care of themselves, and that means starting where they actually are, right? Like, if you would have told that to pre-PT school, Dave, I would have like believed you, but I would also have been like, there's more to it though. There's got to be like tricks and tips and, special techniques, right? Or I would have been like, well, shit, then I'm gonna go to medical school where I can really fix people or whatever, right? Or do the hard science, right? And it's not that even like Austin Baraki, who when he came on this podcast, like that guy's so smart and like, also just super freaking strong, right? And so he's got something figured out. But like most of it, when we were talking, it's just like it's just about communication. Medicine's complicated, right? People's blood work is complicated. I'm not going to fix that, but I can ask them. I can, I can medically treat it. But a lot of it still like boils down to having conversations with people that are hard, and so I think that's the tricky part for us is there's just this giant dissonance, right?
There is, and I agree. Like there's some aspect of going through that level of education and wanting something to show for it. I mean, besides like the diploma that's on the wall, right? Like you want to feel like in some capacity for most people, like that you've accomplished something that other people haven't. So you have this ability to maybe help people at a higher degree. Like I think that there's probably some aspect of that's probably why a lot of us go through advanced schooling is because hopefully, like we want to be able to help people at our highest capacity, and in that moment, we view that path as the way to do so. I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I don't regret going to chiropractic school. I think there's a good chance that I may have made a different decision if I knew what I know now. But the way that I look at it now is that I think there was still so much exposure to different ideas and different aspects of education that have helped me formulate the way that I approach things now, that even if I'm not acting as a traditional chiropractor and cracking people's backs all day, I still think there's so much of the education and learning that I've gone through that has positively contributed to the way that I can approach care today. I don't think I would have arrived at the same place if I had taken other paths. Not to say that would be better or worse, but I can have a unique appreciation for being able to combine the strength and conditioning with some of the rehab stuff that I've learned from other professionals, with my understanding of biomechanics, despite having, spent the first part of my career seriously living in the biomedical world and being a biomechanist with everything. But like all of these components still contribute to what someone is experiencing. And we live in this world where we want to say this matters the most or this doesn't matter at all. But in reality, a lot of things probably just matter a little bit, or they matter some. And it's the conglomeration of all of these things that really is what's creating the result at the end of the day. So I think having exposure to different ideas and to different paths of education, there are so many things we can take away from it, whether or not, again, I practice as a traditional chiropractor, whatever that means. I could really care less, but I still feel like it's drastically contributed to the practitioner that I am now, and hopefully to the results that I'm seeing with my patients.
I think we just had a plumber here, and I just sometimes like, should I just go be a plumber? Like, should I just go freaking do like, just like, 'cause then I you get to use your hands, it's probably everything's got pros and cons. I think that's one of the biggest things that I just tell myself, and I kind of tell other students or tell students and people, it's like, if you're miserable inside PT or chiropractic, like go look for other options, 'cause I'm not miserable in my work, right? I'm miserable. I'm miserable with the world around my work, right? I'm just miserable with managing information overload and all that type of stuff. And I like that's something I actively know. It's like I have such an addictive, and I think this is the hard part for a lot of chiros and PTs and stuff and medical practitioners. But I really think like chiros and PTs, like we're kind of like the curious people-oriented professions in the medical thing, right? So like I think we want to, I'm not saying other medical practitioners don't do this, but like because we're like pretty generalized, right? We kind of dip our heads into all these concepts and stuff. Whereas like if you were a radiologist, you'd be like, I'm just reading film all day, right? Or if you were internal med, you're just, there's acknowledging complexity and stuff, but like you're basically like you got kind of what you have to do, right? Whereas like me, like I can get in my head about, oh, am I kind of being a little bit of a psychiatrist here? Am I a life coach? Am I, a stress physiologist? Like, what am I, right? And, am I a personal trainer? And like, I'm kind of all those things. I think really a lot of it just boils down to like, I do understand these things. And I think if I can help understand people or help people understand these things as well, I think they can get better, right? And achieve their goals. And honestly, a lot of it just boils down to two, like, have some things that you want to pursue, but like don't make yourself miserable in the pursuit of them. Like I got people who are running marathons or half marathons, and it's like if you don't freaking PR this one, it's okay, right? Like you're gonna be okay. Like let's just finish it. Let's just get it. Like let's get through the season, right? Or if you're a power lifter, like Honestly, one of my like the clients who are power lifters, like there's a few like neurotic power lifters, and there's a few that's just like, I just kind of like doing this. It's the ones who just kind of like doing this that do so much better. They like PR consistently because they're just showing up and pushing a little bit, right? Where the other ones are like, I'm trying to make progress every 4 weeks, right? You mentioned something really important, and I think it's non-specific effects or contextual factors, right? Let's just like riff on like the power of all these little things and then maybe how to invoke or evoke some of those things with people. I honestly think like a lot of it's just being a good human, like not a good human being, like just I just what I do less than I used to is I just don't argue with people. I just like kind of keep going. Yeah, let's just keep lifting. Like during in-person sessions when people are like, I got this going on. And like, yeah, let's see what we got, right? And instead of like trying to jump in, I'm just like, well, let's see how the session goes. And then at the end of the session, I'm like, how did that go? I'm like, I feel better. I'm like, cool. You know?
Yeah, I think contextual effects are incredibly important from my perspective, and I think the research supports this too. There was a paper that came out, I think, last year that they aimed to study what percentage of treatment outcomes were actually coming from specific modalities, and they looked at things like spinal manipulation, kinesiotape, things of that nature, and based on what they found, for pretty much every passive modality that we could apply, a larger percentage of the treatment outcome was likely due to the contextual effects rather than the treatment itself. And I think this really does align, I think, with our understanding of just how people are. And then the example I always go back to is, we'll just talk about spinal manipulation because it's easy as a chiropractor. And it's, think if you were to go in a chiropractic office and the chiropractor was just an asshole. He hasn't showered in a week. Like the place is disgusting and dirty, and you just get bad vibes from him. But he go ahead and like adjust your neck. But like you're just really turned off by this individual. Versus like you go into an office where it's very clean. The chiropractor's incredibly kind to you. Maybe they have your favorite coffee brewing, like all these things that are going on. Like it just creates a nice environment and they perform the exact same adjustment on you. And like what's the likelihood that you're going to have a different response in these two different environments? And I think for a lot of people, the answer is probably like the result will probably be very different simply based on what's happening within that environment and how you're thinking about what's going on. So to me, when you start to look at these things, like that really speaks to the power of all of the things that are going on in a clinical encounter that are not the therapies themselves, and why we should have awareness of those things because they probably contribute significantly to like what the outcomes actually are. I had a really good conversation probably 3 years ago with a chiropractor who only adjusts patients and someone who thinks that the adjustment is the most powerful thing that we do and we should do with all the patients. And I asked him a very simple question at one point in time because I could tell he was passionate about the patients that he works with and probably had a really good relationship with them. And the question that I asked him was just, how much of the treatment outcome do you think could be from the fact that your patients probably love seeing you? You've created a very warm space for them that's conducive to healing. Like it's just a safe space. And I know that they can tell that you care about them a lot. Do you think that there's any power in that aspect of your therapeutic relationship with your patients? I didn't hear anything after that. So I don't know if I changed his mind. I don't know if I got him to think about things, but it's so interesting because we had a really engaging conversation before that. If I got him to think differently about what was going on. So to me, like that's really like in a nutshell, like what contextual effects can be. It's everything that's not the treatment and how that could potentially affect outcomes. And I think that there is a very strong likelihood that those things are incredibly important and that as practitioners, we should have awareness that these things are going on and can have both a positive and negative effect in the care that we're providing.
You want to know my dirty secret?
Let's
I
hear it.
think it's all just general. It is contextual effects. Like I think I very much believe in specific adaptation to impose demands, but I really think it's just this feed forward of like you can call it placebo, you can call it whatever you want, but it is just getting that person to feel like they are safe and that things are going to be okay. right? And that they can keep stepping forward into uncertainty, whatever that looks like, right? But like, dude, yeah, like every dentist office you ever go to, it's like, we're gonna have super clean. There's, we're gonna have really nice front desk. We're gonna say hi to you, right? Like it's the same thing, like, and it really, so much of it is that if you like, that's why I really do love like training. And I think it's a great analogy because like it is hard and it's challenging. And once you even just get yourself to show up and start going, like you do, you start to feel better, right? And you that it's kind of that hormetic adaptation where you do something hard and then your baseline goes back, right? But like, yeah, it's we went to a chiropractor growing up, and he it really we my mom believed in it. It was helpful for her, especially like because she was doing some exercises and stuff. She was getting manipulated, but she was doing some exercises and stuff. But I also just look at it like my mom's kind of, I love my mom, but she's, I look at the reference of kind of the chronic pain type of archetype, and it's like you're the mom of three boys, in middle America, right? You're the middle child of nine kids, like you're worrying about your mom and your dad and your kids, and you have all these stressors, and you and your body, like The Body Keeps the Score is a great book. I don't necessarily vibe into a lot of the aspects of what Bessel like talks about, like we store trauma. I don't really, I think we just get stressed out and we get tight and we get afraid. And I think, but like what it helped my mom was just like, oh yeah, there's things I can do, right? And I can learn to, and it's also, dude, like they would just, we would go in there and be like, yeah, get manipulated. I looking back, it's like, damn, they really did take a lot of x-rays. 'Cause like, I'm like, why do I care about this x-ray? And it's like, well, we did this and now it's your second x-ray. But then it was like, yeah, lay on this warm pad and get this nice electrical soothing thing going through you for 20 minutes and just take a nap. And it's like,
That's
okay,
great.
I feel pretty good, right? And I think back in that too, like, mid-90s, it's like, well, there wasn't like a whole lot of dissonance in the narrative now. And I think that's kind of where, and it was the same thing with rehab. It's like, if you're taking people who are just in pain and you're like just helping them relax and chill out, I think it kind of works. But, and that's actually literally my post today is like, that's a, I think it's a repost, but it is a repost. I know it's a repost, but it's like you did all these easy exercises and you deloaded yourself for 6 weeks. Oh, you feel good, but now you've just deconditioned yourself, right? And so we've just learned that, yeah, there is a calming down, but now there's also this building up. And if we don't do both, well, we're people get back into these cycles, right? And yeah, I think it's just so much of it is just this is the human experience, and we're just trying to help humans by helping them understand, and then like not be the worst thing that practitioners do is tell people shit that is scary or keeps them in a box. Like I think me and you are both going to agree. I don't care if you manipulate. Like
No.
if you manipulate and you're telling people scary shit, like that's like no bueno, right? But like, yeah, hey, you know what? It sounds like you just need this, I'm happy to manipulate it. Let's also do some exercise because the manipulation will help probably you feel a little bit better and we'll get moving on top of it, right? So that's my big thing. It's like just don't fucking scare people, right?
Yeah, but you brought up a good point there, like related to the post that you had today. It's unfortunately like that's a huge aspect of well, PT and chiropractic. It's very much, we're going to do these things that will make you feel better, but we're also going to decondition you or instill some type of fear that you should no longer do these things that you probably should be doing. And I think that's really where I'm hopeful that we're in a phase now where we're seeing some level of transition where we have the practitioners who are skilled in both, where, okay, I have the tools to calm shit down when I need to, but we're very much going to balance that with some type of active approach to maintain whatever physical capacity we can in the moment, and then as soon as possible, relative to symptoms and flare-ups and whatever it is, we're going to scale these things back up in a way that makes sense for you and your goals. And like to me, that's the fun part about this job is that the pain management, it's like, okay, I can adjust people, I can do, I don't want to do that all day. I don't. There's people that do, that's great. Good for you. I can't do that all day. I want to be in the gym. I want to see people moving weight, building confidence, getting stronger, getting back to above and beyond where they were before even seeing me or being injured. That's what makes every day fun and exciting. So it's like to have the capacity to both do both of these things as a practitioner. I think there are just more and more people who want to be in that space and in that world because it helps us avoid the burnout of being in these professions. But also, it's just fun. And it's fun to see your clients and patients make that type of progress and then get to that point where, yeah, they are better than they were before they even got hurt. Like that's the coolest part about our job.
I want to work with people who accept 3 out of 10 pain levels.
Yeah,
Like, yeah,
absolutely.
right? Like,
100%,
oh, yeah, shit. Yeah,
right?
I'll hurt a little bit, but that's all
Yes.
right. I hit a home run in softball. I feel good. Like,
Perfect.
cause it's really that what you, what we, I think, well, this is kind of a good way to kind of cap this. And then I'm gonna have you back because I think we could just keep riffing on this shit. We'll
Yeah,
do another one in a little while. But
absolutely.
like, what it really boils down to, it's like, dude, if you were like, I have 3 out of 10, but I'm hitting dingers in softball, or I'm playing
Hell
basketball, or I'm playing
yeah.
dingers, and like, cause even then, it's like, well, what the hell does a 3 out of 10 even mean? Like, cause that's really what we're trying to get people to be like, is like, the pain scale that we created is so that we can kind of quantify this very subjective thing. Like, I've written a few that, like, I have gotten absolutely destroyed by 250-pound men playing rugby, and it hurt so fucking bad for 30 seconds, and then I got up and I ran around and I was fine again, and then I was super sore the next day, but I could make sense of it, right? And so much of this game is just helping people make sense of what they're feeling, and a lot of these little moans and groans, they kind of just don't make sense. Like, in my neck hurts today, you know, my hips are, I'm competing in an Olympic lifting meet, so I'm probably, I'm tomorrow, like, I'm literally kind of deloaded,
Nice.
so, but like, it just doesn't make sense to the average person. Where, I mean, you're like, yeah, kind of, you're just probably a little worn down, dude. So like, after you do this meet, just chill out for a week or two, and just, you know, and it'll probably come back. Like, that's the other thing that we do, is like, hey, we're gonna freaking, you're not feeling great, well, let's deload the crap out of you. Like, and I'm not saying don't reduce some of the stress, but like, also, like, there's ebbs and flows. So like, just keep auto-regulating, which just means take what's there, like on this day, take what's there, and then keep going, right?
Yeah, pain is not an abnormal experience. I think that's something that we have to help people to understand, especially. I would much rather be in pain and active and strong and capable than in pain because I can't move around. Like in one shape or form, everyone will experience pain in their lifetime. And I think we don't have to view it as this thing that is always inherently negative. Like you said, if you're playing a sport that you love and you got rocked by somebody, but then you were able to keep playing, like that's to me, that's great. Like you're doing something that you enjoy. There happened to be a moment where it didn't feel great. But you're still doing things that you love. And I think we just have to get away from this idea that pain is always this damaging, abnormal thing, rather than it just being a normal human experience. And that our job is to help people distinguish between, is this something that's just a product of what you're doing? We maybe need to change things around a little bit. Or maybe this is something that we should be more concerned about. And these are the steps that we're going to take. Because to your point, I think most people don't know how to delineate between these two things. And then everything is just scary. The second anything hurts, this is a bad thing. Okay, some things maybe, but probably a lot of it, not so much. And by the way, here's how we're going to handle it and give you the tools so that you can self-manage. Like that's really what it is that we're doing, I think, in a nutshell for most people.
No, I think you just, that's a good place to kind of stop, is like, there is a point where we do want to address, you know, there's always a point where we need to address based on the individual, but there's also just things that, like, should we be that concerned about this, and or should we just continue to move forward? And it's just, it is that decision making. I just think about this more and more. It's like, my job really has become to just help people make better decisions, or make decisions that serve them. Really, I don't want to say better, right? It's just make decisions that serve you. And I lay out a lot of plans, like programming. I think programming has become like this mystical, people think it's a mystical art. Like, the honestly, the simpler, the more simple the program people do, like, the better they do, right? And it really is not like, and it's just principles oriented, but it's just really like, let's make good decisions. And if you make good decisions for you over and over again, th good things happen, right? So, all right, man, where can people find you? And yeah, if there's anything else you want to kind of pitch, we'll do this again, though. This was good. I could have kept going for like 2 more hours, so, but an
Same.
hour and 15 is
Yeah,
good.
I love this show. We can talk about it all day and we'll have to do it again. Best place to find me is Instagram. My personal's at dr.david.newton. And then our clinical platform for students and younger practitioners in the chiropractic space is at clinical underscore concepts. And that's where you can reach us if you're interested in either a mentorship program or a community. We'll probably talk about that more next time, but you can always give that page a follow. If you look through our posts, it definitely will give you an insight into what we're about and the things that we discuss. And you're always free to DM us with any questions or DM my individual page. I love chatting with other practitioners or really anybody in general about this stuff. So if you ever have questions or you just want to shoot the shit, more than happy to do so.
I love it, man. Most of life, most of the good parts of life are just shooting the shit. So
Oh,
I
for
appreciate
sure.
that. All right, David, have a good Friday. I guess this will be up soon, but it's Friday night. So have a good Friday. We'll talk to you later.
All right,
Peace.
man. Thank you. Appreciate
Thank
it.
you. Bye.